What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Kicks and Picks Podcast. We are going to do a 2024-2025 Premier League season preview. We have a special friend of the podcast, special guest, second time coming back, Steve Cerruti. You guys know him from The Ringer, from all of his other work. Steve, appreciate you coming on with us, man. Excited to go through the Premier League offseason with you.
Absolutely, guys. Always good to hop on. Yeah, it just kind of feels like, you know, we've had the grind of the Euros and the Copa, two like drastically different tournaments, somehow the same sport. And now, yeah, getting back into like, all right, what's going on? You know, what are the transfers? Who's moving around where? What do I like for next season? So it's been fun.
No question, man. And we followed your coverage. We were on it both tournaments pretty much all summer. And man, just start there. It was a roller coaster. And we started off super hot, got cold, got really hot towards the end of the tournament. Copa, a little bit more of a mess, I feel like, for everybody just across the board, right? Unless you're betting yellow cards and red cards. I think that was a little tougher to call. Yeah. But yeah, how'd you guys make out, all things considered?
Euros, you know, this is why like I kind of hate futures for the Euros, especially when it's like a 2014 tournament, because you just have like, you know, we were talking about this with DeBundo, who was like one of my co-hosts on the Ringer Soccer Show. He was really in on the Netherlands. And obviously the Dutch, they make the semifinal, but we were like joking, like, I don't even know if they're any good. Like they finished fourth in their group and they didn't really have that many good teams to play to get to the semifinal. But then you could have argued they could have beat England. Who knows, they could have won the damn thing had things gone there. So I don't know, man. We did okay. You know, I think our betting, like I definitely did well on some of the futures, the Copa, like we were just kind of hammering unders a lot, which worked out pretty well for us. But I don't know, sometimes with those knockout tournaments, especially when they're uneven, you can't really predict what, like where teams are going to line up, especially when third place teams start getting in the mix. It's hard to predict, but we did all right.
Yeah. It also felt like there's a lot of the teams were kind of like in transition periods of their, you know, timelines, you know, between Croatia on the downslope now from what they've been doing the last couple of years, and Netherlands and Belgium also kind of in these weird transition stages. So it felt like it was just kind of a, at least in the Euros, kind of a, you know, anybody that's good could be decent one day and then terrible the next. But still a good tournament nonetheless.
Yeah, the thing I'll say, like two futures that pissed me off to this day. We had an over on France team total goals and an over on England team total goals. You have a team in the semifinals and a team in the finals, and the under comes in on both of their goals for the tournament. Like that's, how do you handicap that? How do you plan for that? It's just insane.
Yeah, and it was also funny. I think one of my other co-hosts, Paul, he had like Portugal to take 9 points from the group stage. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's looking great. And then all of a sudden they just kind of punt on that last one. Portugal doesn't score for what was it, like 210
straight
minutes
games
or something.
Yep.
Yeah. Like it's just stupid. Like just dumb things. I don't know, man. Dumb. That's why it's so fun. Like I just love the international tournaments because it is such a crapshoot. You know, it did feel right. I mean, Spain were the best team. So like, I'm not like a Spain fan, but I'm happy they won. They clearly deserved it. I feel like the Italians, I went into it like being like, this team's not good. And I faded them. And then I saw the comeback against Albania and I started drinking the Kool-Aid and I was immediately back to like, why did I even trust this team for 1 second? England, you know, England could have very easily, like they won their group, won one group stage game, and then just, you know, I guess you could say they were resilient in that they came back from, you know, three of their four knockout stage games, but also like they care if they're on the other side of the bracket, they could have easily lost in the knockout round, and we'd be talking about how terrible their performance was. I feel like it's just always it's a total crapshoot. France, as you mentioned, they weren't very good. You know, Portugal was super up and down. You know, I could never trust a team with Ronald Koeman as an Everton fan. I could never trust a team with Ronald Koeman as their manager. So we'll get to that. But at least Spain, you know, they felt like the deserved winners. Yeah. And I was a little upset because we were all over Colombia in the Copa. Mm-hmm. And
us too.
And it's unfortunately, you know, Argentina is just the machine that they are. But we at least were able to kind of hedge at the end there.
Yeah, for sure. Now, same with us. So good parallels there. We, you know, love the coverage, followed along for sure. So appreciate you taking us through that. But let's get into Premier League. Let's see what's going on. We want to start with your squad, Everton, because they are always in the headlines. I don't know a time they're not. And it's a beautiful thing as an outsider.
Never for the right reason.
Well, I was going to say, I'm a Lazio fan, so it's kind of the same. And it's nice to see other clubs, other fans have a little bit of misery. Don't wish that on you, all joke aside. But I mean, let's just kind of talk about the state of the club. So trying to sell the team, current ownership. We don't really know what's going on. There was an American firm, 777 Partners. They were looking at the club. That fell through. Then the Friedkin Group is looking at the club. They're the ones who also own your other squad, Roma. Don't know how serious that is. Give us kind of a state of ownership, club management. Like, what's kind of going on from that standpoint?
Well, the owner is terrible. The current owner, Farhad Moshiri, he just doesn't know anything about the sport. And he wasn't even the issue was, you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, that basically changed the entire fortune of Everton's like financial future, because they're the guy who was really backing them was, I believe his last name was Usmanov, which checks out. They had to kind of cut ties with him and Moshiri, the owner, who the owner, at least to the facing public, who was like a former Arsenal, you know, minority owner, I believe. He takes over, but he's got no money. He doesn't know what he's doing. And then ever since then, the club was just, I mean, it was already like kind of a mess, but that just sort of was like the last straw that just started toppling down. And, you know, they're trying to build this new stadium. They've got all this money that's kind of, and that was like the Everton fans' arguments with some of the financial fair play stuff, and, you know, how they got a couple of different point deductions. They're arguing that like, this is stadium related. It's not, you know, related to like the actual buying and selling of players. So this should be different. So Everton fans felt pretty hard done by the Premier League and just their ownership situation. It's like pretty dire. It's bad. Like they, you mentioned 777. So they basically came in, they own Genoa, I believe. I think they own a couple of different clubs, but they're essentially just like a pyramid scheme type. They're some Miami based company who I don't even think they have any actual money. They just like move money around different places. And so they somehow loaned Everton a ton of money, and their loan terms that everything I've read are just like horrific. And it's so bad that, like, you know, when has the Premier League ever not approved an owner to like take over a club? They're like, they've approved different nation states, whoever. This is like the first one. They're like, actually, these guys they're a little bit too out there. Do they actually have any money? We can't approve this, which for Premier League standards is insane. So then the Friedkin Group comes in who owns Roma. And I've had nothing but good things to say. I mean, we've had two straight American owners at Roma. The Pelota era started off well, but just he could never build a stadium, and it's sour. I think he got bored, and, you know, then the team started going downhill. But the Friedkins have come in and they've wanted to spend money. They paid off a ton of debt for Roma, but they only can do so much under the financial fair play limitations, which just continues to be a thorn in their side. So, like, you know, I had a bunch of Everton people being like, oh, you follow Bose, like, why aren't they buying all these players? It's like, well, because they can't. Like, they would do it. The guy like is a billionaire, obviously. I think he was in Dunkirk as the guy flying the plane. Like, he's insane. He owns like a movie studio. They own a bunch of Toyota dealerships. So I was actually kind of excited about that. I was like, this is going to be great for the club. They actually have money. They actually have a plan. And, you know, I didn't know how it would be for Roma, because I assumed Everton would probably be the bigger prize there, just being in the Premier League. But the reports are that they basically took one look at the actual books of what Everton were, what was going on. And they were like, yeah, this is a hard pass for us. No, thanks. Because I think those loans for 777 are just so bad that they were just like, we can't even fix this problem, despite the fact that they pumped like hundreds of millions of dollars into Roma. So that's kind of where we are now. They're going to need, they're pretty cash strapped. Like Everton, I don't know that they can go through the entire season without like another loan, because they just don't have the money. So they kind of needed this takeover to happen now. So I don't want to say it's like the Titanic waiting to happen, but it's like pretty bad at this particular moment in time.
Yeah, it's not too often that you have a club with a brand new 50,000 plus seat stadium that's slated to open by, they said, end of 2024. I don't know if they actually mean like it's going to have fans in it at some point during the season, or if they're talking at the end of this season, but to have that much like uncertainty, especially financially, when you have what typically is an injection of revenue with a new stadium and all the extra seats and tickets and concessions you can sell, it's a pretty crazy scenario that Everton have found themselves in.
Yeah. And I think like the stadium itself is by all accounts like beautiful and great. And yeah. I think there's some competition. Is it the Euros? I forget whatever next thing. It's not the Olympics, whatever it is. Like, there's going to be games played in Liverpool, and it will be played at their stadium, not at Anfield. So like by all accounts, it's great, but who knows? They might even be playing in the championship next year. So that would be the most Everton thing in the world to have this like state of the art, beautiful stadium and not even playing in the Premier League.
Man. So you took me to my next question. Last time you were on, Everton were fighting relegation. We spoke about it. We made a little wager. This was, I think, right before they appointed Sean Dyche at the time. So
yeah, that nullified the wager. That's I did not have that information before when we made that bet, because they would have gone down if they didn't get Sean Dyche. That's 100% certain.
Fair enough. So they've battled it now for what, a year and a half? plus 162 to get relegated. Scotty and I were joking about it before you hopped on. You know, do we for the culture, for our friendship here, take Everton to get relegated at plus 162, or have we learned our lesson? Because honestly, it seems to me like, financial issues aside, management aside, it seems like they've turned the corner from a footballing standpoint. I mean, you know, that points deduction last year is really the only thing that had them in danger of even being relegated. Yep. Mm-hmm. What's your outlook from a footballing standpoint? You know, or positive, or do you think it's going to be a dogfight for those bottom five spots?
I only say that I'm not as worried because I think the bottom three is, again, like last year, obviously three teams went right back down. I think there's a good chance it happens again this year. Like, I think Leicester, they lose their manager. You know, their roster still is like kind of in a weird state. I'm not really all in on them. Southampton, I think they go up, they go down. I don't think they're going to care. Like, they're still about kind of like youth and making money. And then Ipswich is kind of a wild card too, a team that, you know, we haven't seen in forever. So I feel sort of comfortable in that. Like last year, they wouldn't, as you said, they wouldn't have even been in this position if it wasn't for the points deductions. They were like a solid, you know, mid-table, like 10th, 11th team. Yep. Without that, you know, I think if you just look at their roster, I mean, there's been some talk about Dominic Calvert-Lewin potentially leaving, Beto, a guy they just signed, who I actually don't think is bad, but has played kind of poorly for Everton. And they certainly spent way too much on him, but that's just the Premier League in general. But like, you know, I think they sold Onana to Aston Villa, which, if that's the price of keeping Jared Branthwaite, who I still maintain is England's best center back, even if he's not on wasn't on the Euro roster, like if that's what it takes to keep him around for another year or two, he and Tarkowski at the back, Pickford has been their player of the season, or at least the guy that saved them for like basically this entire run of relegation battles. I don't think the roster's that bad. They bring Jack Harrison back. They bring in I'm blanking on his name, but the guy, he was at Southampton, or I'm sorry, he was at Sheffield, went over to France, and then came back to the Premier League. Now he was Sheffield's like best player before they got promoted last season. They've made a couple of Ndaye, I think is his name. They've made a couple of good moves, and I think that the structure of the squad is solid, and Sean Dyche is just, unless his team is terrible, he's going to give you a chance. Like, you're never going to like love the way that they play, but they're hard to beat. And that's the thing. Everton, like, for the last 2 years before he got there, were just an easy team to beat, and they became a hard team to beat under him. So I think things would have to go really, really. I'm more worried about this team running out of money than I am them like not being good enough to stay up next year. Having said that, plus money on an Everton relegation is never probably a bad thing, but I think they'll be all right, assuming they could actually pay their bills.
Yeah, so, I mean, Scotty, I'll throw the odds to you before you go. So Leicester, like you mentioned, -225. Ipswich is -120. Southampton +140. Nottingham Forest, the other one, +225. And Wolves at +450. Nottingham Forest jumps out to me as a little bit of a value play there.
Yeah, I would say I would prefer Forest over Everton for sure. And if you really want Everton, like, you know, I don't see them being a team that's going to get off to like a painfully slow start, because there hasn't been a whole lot of, you know, transfers already with the Euros and Copa America. So I don't see a whole lot of, like, you know, high transfer spends coming in with new players kind of changing the status quo. So I think Everton will probably be decent, especially with the consistency of having Dyche still as their manager. So if you really want to bet Everton, you could probably wait until like October or so and see, you know, maybe they're sitting in, you know, 12th place and they have like a nice 5-6 point cushion. Then they'll probably be a little bit better odds. But off the jump, you know, I like Forest. You know, Stevie called out the fact that last year the three newcomers went right back down. That's the first time it's happened since, I think, 1997. So, you know, odds would say it's probably not going to happen again. Of the three clubs, maybe Southampton is the most likely to stay up, just because, you know, Leicester in a tough situation, losing their manager, it's always a hard one to replace. So Forest, to me, maybe makes the most sense. Beyond that, though, I mean, Bournemouth actually played pretty well, especially towards the end of last season. So I wouldn't put them in that group at all. Wolverhampton, I don't know.
I was going to say, I think Wolves are actually a sneaky, like, I thought they were going down last year. They were like a trendy pick, I think, and then they got off kind of a good start, but they didn't play well at all the second half of last year. I don't love their squad at all. Doesn't feel like there's like a ton of investment.
They don't score either.
Yeah, they don't score. Like, it's just, yeah. I you know, what are they, like, +450 or something? That's I'd rather bet on them than, I mean, you know, Forrest will be there. I think that's the best number if you're looking for something.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
My problem with Wolverhampton is I just kind of buy into some of their better players. Like, I love Neto and I love
he's never healthy. Like,
I know, but like, that's my problem is, like, I look at them like, oh my God, this dude is like a top 10 winger in the league. Like, he can clearly score goals and create, and we pair him with Wong, like, who was on fire for like 2 or 3 months last season. I totally buy into that hype. I'm like, they're not going to get relegated. Like, they got too much actual top end talent to actually get to that point. But you're right. You know, Neto always gets hurt and he misses, you know, 2 or 3 months at crucial points of the season. But again, that's just like a me problem. Like, I just buy into them because I watch them play in their like best games and I'm just like, all in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, listen, I don't think any of the three of us really believe Everton are going to go down. I'm glad that the outlook, management aside, is positive. Excited to see what they do, and certainly it's something we keep tabs on. We appreciate the banter back and forth. Let's talk about the team nobody wants to talk about, Manchester City, reigning champs. What, 4 straight years, 6 of the last 7?
Yeah.
Pep still at the helm. Could it be his last season in charge? Is there any reason to believe that they will not finish as champions? Do you see Arsenal having any sort of shot? +125 for City, +190 for Arsenal in the futures market. Can Arsenal get over the hump? What do you make of City? Any and all thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, I do think it probably is Pep's last season. It feels like kind of natural to let the contract run out, and he's obviously done everything you can. He's won everything you can there. And, you know, last year winning 4 straight, first time it's ever been done, I think, in the Premier League, maybe even in the entire English league era, but the Premier League era for sure. They've won the Champions League, you know, and like the squad, it does feel like the squad is sort of at a weird tipping point where there's some guys that are like De Bruyne, like Ederson's been the rumor to go to Saudi Arabia. Although I think I've always been on record, I think he's one of the most overrated goalkeepers in the entire world. If they sold him, I don't even think it would be that big of a deal.
Pass the ball though.
He can, yeah, listen, he's got a great left foot on him. But when it comes to like saving things, like you need to make a couple saves a game. And sometimes I'm like, wow, how do you not save that? You have one job all game. So if they can get a big fee for him, I think that's a huge win for them. But, you know, like Bernardo Silva's been like rumored to be, he's wanted to leave, what feels like, for 5 straight years. You know, I don't actually love some of the, like, I didn't love the Nunez signing last year. Speaking of Wolves, like, just that was a weird overpay, and I don't think it's who they needed. So I don't know. Like, I still think they're head and shoulders better because they have Haaland, and if KDB is healthy, like, I think Haaland's not going to have the bad year that he had last year. And the biggest thing for me is, like, Arsenal, yeah, sure, they signed my boy Calafiori, which really does hurt me. Although Roma, I think, are going to make about $8 million on that one, which I at least get something out of that. Mm-hmm. Because they had a sell-on clause, at Basel, and then he goes to Bologna, and it's all being worked out legally. But they didn't sell, like, they still don't have like the out and out striker. Like, that's what they need, you know. And I worry about Arsenal in big games or in big like stretches where they just have a guy who could bang in goals, and they just don't have that. Like, I've come around on the Kai Havertz thing. Like, at first I was like, I think he's, well, coming out of Leverkusen, I'm like, this guy's great, but I also didn't think he was a striker. So he goes to Chelsea, he scores the game winning goal in the Champions League final against City, and but like, other than that, like, it hasn't really gone right. And I think when you saw him play for Arsenal, like, yeah, he makes good runs and he's a good passer, but like, he does everything you want a striker to do except for score goals and like be clinical. And so at some point you're going to need a guy who can just guarantee you 20 goals. Like, that to me is the difference between those two teams. And yeah, sure, like, City could maybe suffer some injuries and things could happen, but for me, I just don't trust Arsenal in that. I mean, if are Arsenal going to 1-0 their way the entire season to a title? Like, maybe, but that's like really hard to ask, because then you're having to basically, you know, if you give up a goal, you're having to be bailed out by your offense, which I just don't trust as much. I think Saka, like, he's played so many minutes over the last couple of years that at some point, like, he's also been healthy a ton. Martinelli, I think, I like him as a player, but I don't know if I love him. Like, I feel like they probably need some more competition in that sort of area of the pitch. I love the midfield. I love Declan Rice. Obviously, Odegaard is incredible, but I think that's asking a lot for them again to compete with City, because City are just on a whole different level. So I think it's those two. Like, I don't think there's anybody else. And I think that's probably why it's likely that City just win it again, because if it was a three-way race or it was more competition at the top, you never know. Somebody else can make that jump. But if I'm just saying, hey, I have to pick Arsenal or City, I'm not going to pick Arsenal unless they figure out some of their issues up front.
Man, I think you hit the nail on the head. Sorry, Scotty. You know, we've kind of been saying that for 2 years now, and I'll hit you with a parallel. They're like Brazil, right? All this talent, mm-hmm. all depth in a lot of areas and a lot of attacking areas. Who's scoring the goals? Like, at what point do you have that one guy you could depend on that's going to be there, or that's going to open up space? Or, like you said, you're not even asking for much. 15 goals. I don't know. I mean, I guess take it for granted. They had guys like Henri forever, right? Who 25 goals was a guarantee.
That, even Giroud, even like,
right, for that matter, yeah,
like,
right?
And it's so prime, like, you take that guy tomorrow.
I think I agree with you 100% that to me is the big difference between these teams. And credit to Arsenal, they've hung around a little bit later for, you know, 2 years in a row now. But to really get over the hump in March, they got to make a signing. They have to do something. So sorry, Scott, I cut you off. Just wanted to agree.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, you know, Arsenal kind of have to show us that they can raise their ceiling. Because I think last season, you know, they were as lucky as anybody in terms of injuries and health. I know they lost Timber for the season with that torn ACL, but most of their main guys played 35 plus matches in the Premier League. And, you know, that's not something that you're going to see every season, especially with the fixture list that you get, you know, in modern day soccer with, you know, Champions League and all the domestic cups. So, like, are they going to turn around another season where Saka's playing 35 games, where, you know, Saliba, I think, played all 38 games, where Gabriel is going to play 35 plus games? Like, somebody's going to go down. You're going to have to use that depth. You know, that's where your 1-0 games tend to go away from you, where you don't have the guy that's going to, you know, help you, you know, break down the opposing team's defense or whatever. And then on the flip side, like, we seen City struggle last year. Like, they lost KDB for the first half of the season and didn't really flinch. Then they went on their run, their patented second half run, where they go basically, you know, 18-0 and, you know, they wrap it up. And then, you know, a player we didn't even talk about in City is Rodri, who I think is, you know, arguably one of the best players in the Premier League, especially at keeping consistent performances going. And it's just, you know, there's no reason for me to bet against them right now. As long as Pep is in charge, as long as those core guys are still there, you know, it's tough to say, like, yeah, like, well, six of the last seven seasons, like, there's no way to call any of that, you know, fluky. It's just pure unadulterated dominance right now.
If I'm making an Arsenal bet, I'd rather bet them win the Champions League than win the Premier League. And you can get them for like plus 900 right now. Like, they're like kind of built like a tournament team more than they are like elite. I mean, again, they had a great season in the Premier League last year. But I also think part of that is it's top heavy in that there are two teams I think that are clearly above everybody else, but you know, the Premier League is usually like 3-4 teams that could win the title. Like, Chelsea's down, United is a mess. Like, when you know, Liverpool, we'll see. I don't put them, sorry, Scotty, I don't put them in this at all. I think they're probably going to finish top four, but I think it'll kind of be like, I think last year was like, that's just showed you how incredible Klopp was, that they were even in it in the first place. So, like, you know, I feel like I'm shitting on Arsenal. I do like Arsenal. I think they have an incredible team, but you know, Scotty, like, all the years of like having to battle that team, and you got through one time, and it was kind of like, you know, City had this down dip year. Like, that's what it's going to take, really, for them to do this. Otherwise, they're going to like get to 100 points, and Arsenal's going to be kicking themselves because they dropped a couple points to some dumb team because they couldn't score enough goals.
Yeah, are you really going to be putting up, you know, 95 points in a season where your top three goal scorers are Saka, Trossard, and Havertz, right? Like, that's not really the winning recipe.
For sure. So I think we're all in agreement there. City's to lose. Steve, you brought up, you know, a couple of other squads here. Let's go into Liverpool. Let's maybe go into Chelsea. Two clubs among the big six in the league, with new managers. So, question is, which manager do you think has a better chance of success between Poole and Chelsea?
I would say it's got to be Liverpool, just because I feel like the infrastructure is a little bit better. Like, I was pretty down on, like, I know people last year were like, oh, Chelsea, like, they're going to be right up there, they're going to bounce back. I did not believe that at all. I still don't know whether Nicholas Jackson's good or not. I'm not the biggest Darwin Nunez fan, but I'm not the biggest Nunez fan, but like, I'd take him over Jackson right now. I mean, I think both guys are kind of similar in that they're wasteful, but I mean, at least Nunez is just like a chaos merchant, and he just like, you never know what's going to happen with him. So I would say, I know as a Roma fan, we have had this like weird 3-year rivalry with Feyenoord. So I like weirdly know a lot about Slot, and like, he does seem like a good manager. Even though Roma got the better of them, I think all of those times, but you know, the question is, like, you always want to be the guy who replaces the guy, or you don't want to be the guy who replaces the guy. You want to be the guy after who replaces that guy. And it's just a, you know, like, speaking of, like, you know, kind of rosters in transition, I mean, Salah's older, you know, I guess obviously we'll see what happens with Van Dijk, and there's still probably moves to be made, Scotty, but I feel good about them. I think they're going to be a good, solid team. And that's why I think, like, just the infrastructure of Liverpool and everything they have is probably going to line them up for more success. I just think Chelsea, there's too many wild cards still. They still have too many players. Their age variances are all over the place. They're still apparently looking for a goalkeeper, even they bought like 100 over the last couple of years. They've needed a striker forever and they don't buy one. You know, and Nkunku could be the whole difference. Maybe he's the difference this year. He just comes out and he was basically hurt all last year, and maybe he's incredible and that's the difference. But that's asking a lot of a guy who has never really played at that level in the Premier League before. So I'm higher on Chelsea this year, but I would have to say it's got to be Slot, just because I think the team and everything they have is just better prepared to do that. He's got more leaders on his team too. Chelsea have like no leaders, I feel like. You know, I like Enzo as a player. I think he's like kind of underrated now, even though everybody kind of thinks he sucks. But I don't know that he's a leader. Like, he doesn't have a Van Dijk in the squad or an Alisson. Like, there's just, you know, they lost Thiago Silva. Like, I just think there's too many things. There's too many variables for Chelsea for me to like really believe in them that much this season.
This is what, their fourth manager in 18 months? Do I have that right? Something like that?
It's not great. It's a little more
than 18 months, but it's close. Yeah.
Okay.
There was a time, I think I tweeted this out, where like the last 7 or 8 managers that had managed Chelsea were like completely out of a job too. And I don't even think they were like bad managers, but it was just like, it's like a black hole of your career when you go there.
Beat you down.
Conte, it was like going back all the way to Conte. He was still out of a job at that point too. Obviously he took the Napoli gig, but it's nuts, man. And at some point it's like, hey, it's us. It's not you guys. It's us.
Yep. Yeah. And the weird thing is, like, so, I mean, to answer your question, Nick, like, I guess it depends on how we want to define success, because I don't know that Liverpool are going to do better than they did last season, right? Like, arguably, I want to say Klopp is a definitive top three manager right now, you know, in today's day. And that has to count for something, right? Like, if you give that same squad with the same, you know, circumstances to a Slot, does he finish in third? Probably not. You know, Klopp's managerial skills have to account for something in the final table. So I don't know that they're going to do better than third again this season. That might be their ceiling, but if they get to third, that's certainly successful. But with Chelsea, like, they were a hot mess for 80% of the season last year. They were sitting in like 12th to 10th place, and then they went on that crazy run in April and in May where it was like, oh, maybe Poch is the guy, and they kind of like figured it out. You know, all these 100 million pound players are starting to figure out the system and put in the performances that, you know, justify their price tag. And then Poch leaves, and now they have a new manager coming in. So it's, you know, raises the questions all over again. But, you know, I think
success, does he finish the season?
Yeah. Like, you would hope so, right?
There's no way, at this point. I mean, as much as I want to root for like absolute chaos, because it's funny to see Chelsea in this state, there's no way. Like, you have to, like, you can't do this again. Yeah. Like, Poch, the thing about Poch is it's hard to tell. Like, was that surge at the end of last season, like, was that actually something, or was that just like you playing a bunch of teams that didn't have anything to play for, and you, like, you know, you guys are trying not to be embarrassing? Because they did end up finishing sixth, which is insane, because they were like basically what, like 14th for a lot of the season. But I don't know if that was like, hey, like, this team really figured it out, or like they just played a lot of teams that didn't have anything to play for.
Yeah, I mean, I think their midfield started to come together, right? Like, that, I think that was really the defining point. And then, you know, that they've, like you said, we still don't know what, like, Nicholas Jackson is. Like, is he going to be a guy that can put in 15 goals a season for you, or is he going to be as wasteful as Nunez is with his finishing? And then same with Sterling. Like, Sterling has never been a guy whose finishing has been, you know, world-class. He's always been a creator and a speed merchant, but, you know, can he be a guy that at least contributes assists in a pretty regular basis? And, you know, I guess that's going to be the piece that, you know, it needs to be solved for. So I don't know. I could see Chelsea, like, at least with last season, we can see that maybe the ownership has more patience with managers now, like with Poch sitting in 14th place for a bulk of the season and not really ever, you know, coming under threat of being fired. It kind of gives, you know, a little bit more time for things to develop in the season. I don't think you're gonna see as much immediate pressure for there to be success for Marseille. And I think that, you know, after a couple of months, like, they should probably start to figure things out again, and they could probably put together a pretty good string of performances. So I think they're likely to at least get to sixth again. I think that's probably a pretty fair bet. I think we have odds for that too at some point, but, you know, I don't see Liverpool doing much better than third if at all, but I could see Chelsea maybe putting a good run of form in the last half of the season and getting into top four. So
if Liverpool finished third, that's a huge success for me. I think that's great.
Especially considering the competition they got around them now. You know, it's not just, you know, obviously City and Arsenal are above, but, you know, I think Tottenham are going to be coming into play a little bit more. They had a great start to the season last year and then fell off a little bit with injuries. But between them, Villa or Chelsea, like, I think those are all clubs that can kind of put together a strong top four campaign for next season.
All right. I'll give you another team. What about the Spurs with Big Ange, right? He was the new kid on the block last year, started off on fire. I think they were in first place for the first 2 months of the season, fell down, came back down to earth a little bit, finished just outside the top four. Do you think they're capable of taking the next step and be a top four challenger, Champions League, you know, solidifying themselves in a Champions League spot with that, you know, continuity for having him for the second season now?
My only concern with Tottenham was, yeah, they had that great start. And I, last year, you know, I always, like, before the season starts, I always tweet out, like, what I, you know, I just predict the top 20, right, the whole table. And I think I had Spurs sixth, I want to say, and they ended up finishing fifth. And before the season, like, you know, I put that out and people are laughing at me, be like, oh, they lost Kane, like, what an idiot. And I'm like, I still think this team is okay. I think I've always liked Ange as a manager, and I think it's only proven to be correct. The problem I have with them and, like, really buying in is, if you look at, like, their underlying numbers, they probably outperformed what they should have done. Like, they scored way more goals than they should have. Their defense allowed way less goals than it would suggest. Like, their defense actually was, like, a little bit of a disaster for where they were in the table, and that kind of caught up with them in the back half of the season. Son's another year older. The attack is still a little bit questionable. I like some of the moves that they've kind of made the last 2 years, but I don't know that I'm ready to be like, hey, this team is, like, gonna finish fourth. Like, I don't, you know, like, if you're looking at odds, and we're just talking about Chelsea, I think they're the favorites to finish fourth, which, you know, I would have it be more of a toss up between them. I'd even throw United in there. Tottenham, I think it's gonna be hard for a team like Villa, but when we're talking specifically about Spurs, I don't know that they have enough in the defense, and I don't know that they have enough in the attack for me to be like, I really, really like this team. I think it's possible that they finish fourth, but I don't know that I think they're going to be kind of how they were last year. They're going to be up and down. They're going to look really good for portions of the season, and they're going to look really vulnerable for other portions of the season and probably finish anywhere between, like, fourth and seventh.
Is Richarlison still going to be their center forward? I mean, have they improved on that? I haven't even followed along.
That's where I was wrong last year. I thought he would have a good year, because I thought the way that Ange kind of plays, like, I don't think they necessarily needed a guy like Kane. I know that's insane to say, but I don't think they really needed a guy like Kane. They need a guy to, like, run in behind and have a higher work rate. And that's why I didn't really think it was going to be that big of a deal, at least in one season. But Richarlison, man, I don't know. Like, he's a guy, he's a very, like, emotional player. And I think a lot of it, like, he got there and it was like Antonio Conte, and I think he just completely just, you know, basically hammered him down to nothing. And I don't think he's really ever recovered from that. And, man, I would take him back at Everton on loan in a heartbeat. Like, that guy, like, he plays his ass off for the shirt, and he's just seems like a genuinely good dude as well. But he just has not ever recovered from kind of that move and, like, the high pressure. Like, hey, I'm going to, like, a big club, quote unquote, and I'm playing in the Champions League. And, you know, he got his run in as striker last year, but just kind of really, I don't know, he was pretty underwhelming. So I don't know if you're going into the season, which it seems like they are with him again, at least, or like me, you know, maybe they're going to put Son there or see what happens. I think that's not a good sign for me.
Yeah. I mean, here's the crazy stat, Nick, and this is probably going to blow your mind. Richarlison turned in 11 goals last season. You know, it seemed like he had no goals for the first 3 or 4 months, and then he started to figure it out. I think doing a lot of, like, super impact sub type performances helped him a little bit. It didn't put as much pressure on him, but the thing I like about Spurs is, like, you know, we talked about, like, age groups for Chelsea being a problem. Like, Spurs players, their core are, like, right in that 23 to 29, you know, age gap, besides Son. He's the only one that's kind of the outlier. So their defense, their midfield, their attackers are all right in that core prime age. And, you know, I think it's tough for Postecoglou that having, you know, Copa and Euros this season, because I think a full preseason with those guys would have been, you know, the thing that takes them to that next step. So I wouldn't be surprised if their season is a little bit of an inverse of last year, where maybe they struggle in August and in September, and then things start to kind of come back together. And assuming they don't get hit by that Chelsea injury bug they got last year, I could see them doing a lot better this year. So I'd be higher on them this year than what they did last year. I like the continuity again with some of these guys. They have plenty of talent. They've got tons of options in attacking. So even if you have some injuries now, like, you can swap in, you know, a Timo Werner and watch him play and maybe get a couple goals here and there. So between him, Brennan Johnson, Kulusevski, like, you've got options on the wings. It's just going to be up to Son and Richarlison to kind of carry the load and attack. And the defense has been okay. Van de Ven seemed like he was going to be the answer for them for a while until he got hurt. And then it's been kind of a question mark. Christian Romero, I think, is kind of beyond his walking red card days now. He seems to have some sort
figured
of like,
it out a little bit.
Like, come to Jesus moment last year. He said, like, he realized he was actually hurting his team, picking up all the yellow cards. So if that continues and that's really the new him, then, you know, the defense should be pretty well anchored between those two. So I'm kind of bullish on them just because of that. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we get 6 months into the season and they do have lots of ebbs and flows. You know, that's just, you know, seems to be the nature of Spurs, unfortunately.
I think that's fair. I wonder how Udoji is going to come back. You know, he suffered a season ending injury last year. He missed the Euros. I think Vicario is really good for them, right? I think he surprised a lot of people. You know, great shot stopper. So that's always a good equalizer if you're gunning for a top four, top six spot. Let's move on to that next kind of group there. Villa, Newcastle, West Ham. You know, they've been disruptors the past few years of this top six. Villa finished inside the top four last year. They'll be playing Champions League football. Any of these three teams, do you see them building on their successful season? Villa specifically, Newcastle maybe two seasons ago, I think, playing in Champions League hurt them probably a little bit domestically last year. And then there's West Ham, who I can't seem to figure out from season to season or even game to game. But another big European run for them. Who do you guys think out of those three can make a push for top six? Or do you think all three can?
I think I wouldn't include West Ham. I don't know. I just don't think their like level is that high. And it's going to be hard for them, I think, to overcome, you know, Villa, Tottenham, United, like all of those teams. Like, I think they might, like, if one of those teams has a down year, which is definitely possible, sure, but that's a big jump. I mean, we've seen those clubs like Newcastle and Villa the last 2 years, like, make the jump into the top four, but that's like pretty unheard of. It's kind of insane, actually, that it's happened. I'm still sort of surprised by it. I think I like, as long as they hold on to Isak and don't have to like lose too many guys, I think I do like Newcastle to have a bounce back season, just because I their team is just solid. And like, the only thing is, like, is Eddie Howe still going to be the manager? There's been rumors about him potentially taking the England gig, which I would not take that job. Although I don't know, I guess the problem with taking the England job is like, everybody hates Southgate, but his like record was good. You know, obviously they've finished like pretty highly in a lot of tournaments. So like, if you, like, everyone's going to like you at the start, but then if you play well and then go out in like the quarterfinals, that's where everyone thinks you're a massive failure, even if you are a better manager and have the team playing better. So I don't know if it's like actually a great job, or who knows, like, it could go either way for me. But if I was him, I would stay at Newcastle at least for another season. And, you know, Villa, I think, are going to have the classic, like, we're in the Champions League, we did all the stuff to get there last year, and they're probably going to be exactly what happened to Newcastle this year. Drop off. I'm still amazed that they, like, it's an incredible achievement that they finished fourth last year. And I don't know that I like their team, like, better. Like, they signed Onana from Everton, who I think is a good player, but he's still kind of like a project. And I think Douglas Luiz, who they lost, is a better player than him right now. And that's that, you know, they paid a pretty penny, but that's like a pretty good pickup for Juventus. I think I like him a lot as a player. You know, the good thing that they have going for them is, like, unlike Arsenal, they have like Ollie Watkins, who's like a proven, you know, guy can score 20 goals, and there aren't many guys in the league that can do that. I think Isak can be that guy too. So that's also why I like Newcastle. But I think I'd lean towards Newcastle, because I do think that bounce back thing is real. When you're in the Champions League for the first time and you put all the pressure on that, like, it's very easy to lose track of what like the regular domestic season is like. And they had a lot of injuries last year too. Mm-hmm. I just kind of like where they're positioned. I think they have a good squad.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting piece for Newcastle is, like, they came into this summer with, like, hey, we may have to sell some players because we have our own FFP issues. And then they've done some of the, like, the shady accounting where, you know, they sold Elliot Anderson, a 21-year-old midfielder in Nottingham Forest, for 41 million euros. Yakuba Minte went to Brighton for 35 million euros. So some weird things going on there, but it sounds like they're going to be able to keep most of their players. There was a rumor going around at the end of June that they'd have to sell Anthony Gordon or Alexander Isak or Guimaraes.
Yeah, to Liverpool, sounds like, right? The Gordon to Liverpool would have been hilarious.
Yeah, the boyhood Liverpool fan that played for Everton for six odd seasons or whatever it was.
Who Everton fans don't even really like and were like happy to sell.
To be fair, I don't think there's a lot of people that love Anthony Gordon just based off of his general demeanor, but neither here nor there. It sounds like he's staying at Newcastle. So I think the probability for them to bounce back is certainly still there. You know, West Ham, my question is like, what's going on with Paqueta? Because I know he was potentially going to be banned for gambling. It sounds like he may not be banned.
No punishment.
Sell him to Brazil instead, like Flamengo or something. And I think that's one of those players where if you lose someone like him, that really drops their level down a significant piece, because I think he's a really underrated player. I mean, he plays really well for Brazil, but as far as like being in that West Ham squad that has a lot of like overhyped guys outside of maybe Jared Bowen, I think he gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. So if he's actually not going to be able to play for them, then yeah, I think West Ham, you can kind of shove out of this group. And then Villa, you know, speaking of how Rodri makes City's performances very consistent, Douglas Luiz is in that same type of role where, you know, if you're going to finish in the top four, you have to be stringing together wins. And the only way to do that is to have that kind of consistent anchor in the midfield. And you know, losing Luiz in that sense, although you still retain some of that attacking talent, you know, attacking talent is going to go through ebbs and flows. So, you know, if Watkins and Bailey have a, you know, down couple weeks, you know, it's going to be on that midfield to kind of keep the scores pretty, you know, even and be able to pull off a set piece winner or something like that. So I agree. I can see, you know, Villa going the way of Newcastle last season, where they kind of take a hit in the domestic performance just because they're focusing on multiple fronts that they're not used to. And then maybe that opens the door for Newcastle to slide back in. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of transpires over the next couple of weeks too in the transfer market, because I think that'll probably dictate a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just for context, to finish top six, Newcastle's -140, Villa's +140. So Newcastle actually favored there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just to the same point where it's, you know, it's tough to repeat that kind of level of performance, and it's even harder when you consider all the extra fixtures they're going to be in. So.
For sure. So we talked a little bit about the relegation battle. One club that hasn't come up yet, and we've been talking about top six for a long time, it warms my heart, because I guess that means they haven't been top six for quite some time. Manchester United. What do we make of that? I don't even have a question to pose. Just what do we make of Manchester United?
So I have a close friend who's a United fan, and he's like pretty level headed about stuff, and we talk all the time, and I've been sort of like talked into, and I think keeping Ten Hag was the right call, because I don't know, like, I think he was bad last year, flat out. Like, I think the team was a mess. They also had a million injuries. Their transfer business is kind of a disaster, but I like some of the things that they've done this year. And I think it's a good buy to buy Xerxes. I don't know how he really fits in with the squad, but to get him for like 35, 40, that's like nothing for a guy who I think has the ceiling that he has. I don't know how exactly he works with Hoyland, but we'll find out. I mean, he said that he's reconciled with Sancho, like, hopefully for their sake and their fans' sake, like, that's true, because it's just crazy how Sancho immediately goes into the Champions League with BVB and in Germany just plays awesome because he's a good player. And like, you know, was he worth what they paid for him? Probably not. There's the English tax there, but like, if they've reconciled and he can be a piece, and then Marcus Rashford like figures it out. Like, I know there's a lot of ifs that I'm throwing at you guys. Yeah. But I do kind of like some of the things that they've done. I infamously last year, I think I picked them to finish second. I thought that Andre Onana was going to be a huge difference maker, because speaking of goalkeepers that I can't stand, I just did not like De Gea. I thought he was bad. And not that Onana was awesome last year, but he allows them, like, the way that he can play with his feet and his athleticism to like play the way that Ten Hag wants to play. And I think there were some weird things that happened last year, some bad results, some mistakes that sort of like we didn't see like the Inter version of Onana, but like, I still think he's a really good goalkeeper. So I kind of, this is going to be like famous last words, and we'll be replaying this probably in like 6 months, but I kind of like United. Like, I just think nobody likes them. Everybody thinks they're terrible. Nobody thinks that they should have brought Ten Hag back. And I'm kind of just like, I think I like that position for them. They're like, hey, our backs are against the wall. Everybody thinks we suck. We actually don't kind of suck. We've got a lot of good players. And you know, the Casemiro thing, hope that for their sake, hopefully they can find a buyer for him, because he's a mess. And I think he's just kind of done as a major player in Europe. But, you know, I do still kind of like their midfield. Like, the attack on paper is okay. Like, defensively, mm-hmm. you know, I like some of the things that they've done. And you know, I think Ten Hag's a good, like, I, you know, I look at what happened at Ajax and what he did in the Champions League, and I'm like, am I supposed to think that this guy sucks? Because like, it's kind of like Chelsea, right? Where like when all these people fail, it's not the individual people or managers, it's the club. And like, I think Ten Hag, like, would I take him at Everton? Well, maybe not Everton because it's not, doesn't really fit the style, but like, would I take him at Roma? If I was like Ajax, would I take him back immediately? Like, would I want him as my manager? Yeah, I think he's, I don't think you just like forget how to be a good manager because, you know, after a couple bad years at a big club. And then obviously you have like the new ownership thing and how they seem to be at least like not spending stupid amounts of money on players like they did in the past just to keep up with Man City and feel like we're spending too. So I actually kind of like, I think they're going to be under the radar, which is weird for a team named Manchester United, but I think they're like plus 200 to finish top four. I don't know if I love that number, but I think they're going to be competing for top four. I really do.
Yeah. I think the questions with United for me is like their attack was like woefully underperformed last year. You know, Rashford is 26, should be in the, you know, peak of his career. And he kind of just was not all that motivated. At least it didn't appear to be super motivated for much of the season last year. Bruno Fernandes, bit of a head case, but super talented, can create from pretty much any position on the field. And, you know, he finished with less than 10 assists last season. So I think there's a lot of room for growth, even within their existing squad. My concern would be maybe their defense is getting a little old. You know, Varane and Maguire are probably not going to be guys that you want to be playing every single day. And that's going to put a lot on, you know, Lisandro Martinez. They do bring in this 18-year-old Euro kid from France for £50 million or whatever it was. And, you know, I can't pretend that I know a lot about him, but if he's as good as he's being hyped up to be, then maybe that's kind of their answer there. And then, like you said, it just kind of comes down to their midfield. So can the midfield be, you know, a strong enough component to link those two lines? And it might be enough. So I could see them surprising some people. They do have a lot of youth coming into, you know, Kaby Manu from, you know, was in the national team for England this season. He looked pretty strong. And then they have Amad Diallo, who has been much heralded and many times loaned out. And I think he's
heard about him for 4 years now.
Right. I think it's like this is his time to shine, given the fact that I think
I like Garnacho a lot, too. Like,
I was going to say, does he make a step up? That's really what you have to see from him at this point.
He's reminds me of Anthony Gordon, to be honest. Like they're very similar.
Oh, I think he's way more talented. I think he's way. I think his. Is it the hair? Gordon? Matt, yeah, I don't, maybe just like, hey, he's like, you know, he's Argentinian, so I'm like drinking the Kool-Aid versus like some, you know, guy from Liverpool. But I think that dude, he scored a goal against Everton last year that like Anthony Gordon just is never going to score in his entire life. And yeah, he's still really, really young. So I don't know. I have high hopes for him. I think he's going to be really good. But yeah, you mentioned Maino. I, if they had bought Jared Branthwaite from Everton, like I think I'm biased clearly. And there were some haggling between those two clubs and like United fans kind of got in their feelings. They're like, oh, well, why is Everton like asking for 70 million or this, whatever? Like he's not worth more than 35. It's like, well, that's the price, dude. He's got like 4 years left on his contract. If you want to buy him, buy him. Like Everton don't have to sell this guy. They basically made that pretty clear. If they had bought him, I said earlier in this podcast, I think he's England's best center back. I think he's freaking phenomenal. I think he's going to be like, I think he's like, you know, there were rumors that Real Madrid were looking at him. Like, I think he's that good of a player. So I don't know much about the kid they bought from France. That was it, Euro. I'm sure he'll be good. But if they had bought Jared Branthwaite, I think I'd feel even better about this team. Cause like, I think they, again, they're just kind of flying under the radar. I think everybody thinks they're terrible and it's either going to go one or two ways. It's going to be a complete dumpster fire again, or they're going to make progress. And I'm banking on them making progress.
Yeah. Like for me, it's the opposite of Arsenal, where it's like, it's hard for me to see them do much worse than they did last season. Like there's a lot of room for growth without much effort having to be put in there. So I can see them having a better season this year just based off of that. But then you throw in some of the purchases that they're putting in, some of the new guys that are going to be looping into the squad. And it's like, yeah, I can see this working.
It's the first time in forever they're playing with literally zero expectations, right? That has to count for something, because obviously we have the teams that are a class above them, but now there's the Villas, the Newcastles, the Tottenhams, that Chelsea, you know, all the teams we've mentioned so far that are expected to be better. So I think United's got nowhere to go but up. I think, Steve, you made a good point, man. Like Casemiro, just start betting on games. I don't know, get kicked out of the league. That's a good solution for you. Get Maino in there. McTominay.
They need Saudi Arabia.
There you go. Get the oil money. McTominay, man, I think he's awesome. I think he's just really, really an underrated player. He's always been good for them. So I think it's going to be fun to watch United again.
Right? Weren't there rumors about him leaving? I thought there was like some Fulham rumor. I guess let's see. I'm reading something now. Ten Hag wants McTominay to stay at United. I'm sure he does. But like, I agree with you. Like, I actually do think like he's kind of he's not quite a meme player like Harry Maguire is, but he's kind of scored some big goals for them, being like, you know, not like an attacking midfielder. Like I like him a lot. He's like a solid squad
player. Does everything.
The weird thing about him is he's 27, and I think he wants to be a regular player. Like, he wants to start pretty much game week in and week out, and that's probably not going to happen with United. He just isn't at that level at this point in his career. So I think that's probably where maybe the rumors are coming in, where it's like, if this guy wants to play and start 30 matches a season in a top league, then he's probably have to move on from United.
Yeah, fair. All right, I think we covered the top teams. We covered relegation. Is there any other team anywhere, mid-table, Wolves, Fulham, Brighton, Palace, whoever, anybody that stands out, anything you think may surprise somebody positively, negatively, anything else worth talking about?
Brighton are a wild card to me. I don't know. Like, I don't think they're going to be terrible, but I also like, again, new manager, like they've made some like Brighton-esque signings where it's like these young guys who, you know, could potentially perform and be sold on for double their price. That's what they do. But that's also kind of a risk where, you know, like last year, I think you kind of saw it. Although I don't know, some of that was De Zerbi. I went on a kind of a rant on our pod about how, like, it's not that I don't like De Zerbi, but I also think he's like maybe the most over. And I say this as an Italian, like, I think he's maybe the most overrated manager in the world. Like, the guy is just like, there's a reason that like only there's a reason he's at Marseille right now. You know, he goes from Sassuolo to where was it? He goes to Shakhtar, right? Mm-hmm. And then he gets the big jump to Brighton. I think he's got a lot of name and cachet, and everybody, oh, you know, Pep loves him, so that must mean he's awesome. I don't know. I think there's a chance that they could be better without him, because it just kind of got weird and stale at the end last year. But I also think they have a lot of new guys, and I don't really have a great read on them, so I'm not going to really like predict where I think they're going to be. I think they'll probably just be solidly mid table. But I think those people expecting them to like be back up, you know, in the top half of the table again, guaranteed. I don't know if that's true. Palace are interesting to me. Obviously, they lose Elise, who's great, but if they can keep Eze, and obviously they've got Wharton in the midfield, and like they don't have Roy Hodgson managing the team anymore, so that's just a net positive overall. A full season of not having Roy is probably, because they were another team last year where I had a ticket for them to be relegated, because I'm like, I just think not that I don't like their squad or their team, but I just think that they lack so much ambition with that manager. And you know, if they lose a guy or two for extended periods of time, like, they could be in real trouble. And they kind of were, and then they end up making the managerial change and they go skyrocket. So I don't know, like, I think Lazio's a good manager. I don't know like where they're, you know, if they're going to be a top half team, but I think they'll be a solid like mid-table ish team. My biggest thing was, I think what we talked about before, I think Wolves could be the team that's actually in trouble of the ones that people think are safe.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what Crystal Palace do. I mean, they do get a lot of money in for selling Luce. So, you know, who do they bring in? They brought in somebody from Real Betis, but that's more of a defensive player. So I figure like there's got to be somebody coming in the attacking side. Their defense last year was actually not too bad. I think Anderson and Gehi and then Decore as the holding.
It's a good pairing.
Did a pretty good job, you know, in terms of holding things down. So if they can, you know, find an adequate replacement for Elise to pair with Etse, then yeah, I think they could probably be a team that maybe finishes, you know, closer to the top half of the table than they do to like the bottom third for sure. But outside of them, I mean, Brentford, you know, they're a weird one to me. Like, I feel like they play better in matches that I watch than they actually end up in the table. So I can't, you know, Tony should be playing for them for the full season, unless they sell him to, I know Arsenal was sniffing around them for a long time, but if you get a full season out of Tony, then yeah, maybe they're another team that kind of, you know, resurrects themselves from a pretty disappointing season last year.
All right, we'll close it out with this. Player futures, top scorer, Haaland, overwhelming favorite, minus 145. Mo Salah, plus 1100. Nunez, plus 1600. Ollie Watkins, plus 1600. Cole Palmer, plus 2,000. Ivan Toney, plus 2,000. Isak, plus 2,300. And Solanke coming in next at plus 3,300. Can anybody take the crown away from Haaland?
Cole Palmer. You mentioned Solanke. Well, I guess, yeah, with his form and like the guys, like, per, you know, minutes per goal, I guess, is insane. Although, man, that's going to be tough to replicate. Not that I don't think he's good, but it's just, like, it's just hard, especially you're not, like, an out-and-out, like, striker to, like, you know, to repeat that goal output. Although, man, he scored obviously a massive goal in the Euros.
He reminds me of Jota in that sense, where it's like he just scores. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, he just finds himself in the right position, and he's a really good finisher, and so he just gets goals. Like, it's not like anything crazy. He's not dominant, you know, when you're watching the game. It's just he just finds the back of the net. I don't know. I kind of like him at plus 2,000 at the very least.
I notoriously, like, hate. I just, like, never bet. Like, this is like, a fun season-long bet thing, like, for Golden Boot. I didn't like betting it in the Euros, and, like, what happened? Like, you know, obviously, like, what, five guys shared it, which was stupid in general. Yeah, and especially when Haaland's in there. I don't know. I don't really love betting this, but to go back to the previous thing we just talked about, if Bournemouth can keep Solanke, which it looks like they might at this point, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any, like, major rumors, I think there's a good chance they can finish top half, too. Good manager. Solid team. Yep. Pour some out for our guy Tyler Adams, who hurt his back again, and now he's going to be out for another couple months to start the season, which sucks. But, like, if you have, this reminds me of, like, Everton with Lukaku back in the day, where, like, if you have, like, just a solid center forward, like, your floor is so much higher, and they have that. And it doesn't really seem like he's worth more to Bournemouth than he probably is for somebody else to buy him in that way. So I imagine he probably stays there. I do like Bournemouth, and I'm not saying Solanke's going to, like, win the Golden Boot, but with that setup and having an offensive manager in the system, and, you know, I like some of their wingers and their attacking players. I don't know. He's not going to win Golden Boots. I'm not telling you to bet on it, but I do think he's going to have another massive season.
I think that's fair. I like Palmer plus 2,000. I like Ollie Watkins at plus 1,600. I think having the monster year that he had, you know, getting called up to England, having kind of all that under your belt is going to give him the confidence to potentially repeat it, take the next step. And I'm not wishing this on anybody, but, you know, Haaland plays a million games a year, right? They're in every competition possible. He's, you know, 1 month away from.
He's a robot. Else having the shot. Like, the guy's not even a human being. So
No question.
I can't back on him being injured. I don't know. I think his thing is, like, is De Bruyne healthy or not? Like, that's probably his ceiling of, like, how many goals he scores.
Yeah, but fair. Man, that point also applies to Watkins. This is going to be Watkins' first season where he's going to be playing midweek games pretty regularly with Champions League. So I think Watkins' output seems to me like that's more likely to be on the downswing than on an upswing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Watkins fan. I've liked him for 2 years. So
I thought for sure one of you guys was going to buy Isak, but I guess his injury history probably gives you a little bit of a pause.
Yeah, I can't buy the least.
Yeah,
fair enough, man. Well, listen, we can't thank you enough for hopping on with us, taking us through this league top to bottom, giving out some good betting advice. Let everybody know what you're up to, what's going on this offseason, what you got coming up.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We got Ringer Soccer Show should be back in a couple weeks. It's in the Ringer Gambling feed. I know it's a little bit confusing, but we do bets. We do just, like, normal soccer talk, all that. I think we're going to be every week on Tuesday. So it'll be in the feed Tuesday morning. So it's funny. I was just, like, researching, like, the new Champions League format. So because I remember reading about it the first time. I'm like, wait, so how does this work again? And I was texting my buddies. I'm like, I actually think it kind of could be fun and sick, even though everybody hates it. So we'll be doing shows, like, a lot around that, and obviously we'll be talking about all the major leagues, but it'll be pretty Champions League focused, and also US, you know, men's national team focused. Maybe we'll plan a head coach sometime soon, who knows. It's not gonna be Jurgen Klopp, which is unfortunate, but every Tuesday on that feed, and then Russillo Show, all other things at the Ringer. So always appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome, man, really appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening. Catch you next week.